Hello and welcome to Canqueer, home of Ottawa's? Canada's queer media. I forgot where I was and
the
what I'm
world's
doing.
Gay media.
We are the world's gay media. Wah. I actually put in an application for a grant today, and it is through the In Spirit Foundation, and they are having like a media impact workshop series of events.
Conference.
May 21st to 24th or 24th to 28th, around then. Anyway, it's out in Vancouver. And I was applying to attend on this grant. And essentially they're like, why you? Like, pourquoi? Like, why would you be the one that we pay to come over? And essentially I was saying, you know, we have been very, very lucky in the last, 5 years to go from a tiny little online-only podcast where actually last night, because we were hanging out last night, we mentioned the fact that our early shows involved blind taste testing flavored lubes.
Yes, that is something that happened a couple of years ago.
It was a great show.
I remember I wasn't there for that, but I don't remember why I wasn't there for that. It wasn't out of protest, though. I do know that. But yeah, we've done some strange and interesting stuff over the years. For sure. He's trying to say something, but he's got chocolate in his mouth.
I'm eating an arrow. This is very unprofessional to eat arrow.
We'll fix it in post.
Really nice dark chocolate. Delicious. So anyway, my whole point was, in this grant application, I was talking about the fact that we've gone from being this small podcast, and I will accept that, you know, in the early days we had a very strong local feel. We were very much what's happening in Ottawa. We were attending board meetings for various organizations. We were really front line in Ottawa. But you know, we've rebranded as Canqueer. We're now syndicated in 5 provinces. We're syndicated internationally now in Auckland, New Zealand. And you know, there's
he's yelling at me.
Oh no, he's yelling at the wall.
Oh, okay.
We're now syndicated in Auckland, New Zealand. So we've really gone from really humble beginnings to kind of a, not a big deal, but when you look at what is available.
I mean, really, we're still technically in our humble beginnings.
We are. But what's really depressing is that when you look at what we're doing, the fact that we have a voice in multiple provinces. So you might be hearing this in Lethbridge or St. John or Auckland or Ottawa. You could be, there's a lot of places that you could be hearing us. And but still, the only reason why that is impressive is because there is no alternative. Bigger, stronger voice. I'm sure that if somebody came with a more professionally made show without eating dark chocolate arrow bars at the top of the hour.
And if they had a budget.
And if they had money. We've never, ever had money for this. And that really kind of brings us into the conversation that we've outlined for this week, which is, we're going to be touching a little bit on fake news, and we're going to have a conversation about that and kind of how that happens. But also, really the conversation is, whatever happened to queer media?
Yeah.
What is going to happen to queer media?
Yeah.
If you think back to January, the first week of January, we interviewed Andrea Houston around a very similar topic. I believe that conversation was on the future of queer media. So we're kind of picking up where that conversation left off.
Right, yeah.
A few months later here. So what are your thoughts? Whatever did happen to queer media?
Well, I think something to remember is how it started. It started with, not lithographs, linographs? What are they called? I can't remember. It's before photocopiers. They had this thing where you got like it was a wax sheet, and you would actually scratch into it the thing that you want to copy. Like, you wouldn't just sit there with like a pen and like scratch into it. It was like a machine that would like imprint into this thing. Anyway, then you'd wrap it around a barrel, and it would just spin, and be ink on it. I don't remember what it's called. But anyway, before photocopiers, there was another technology that was used. And people would just use that, and they would make local rags. So the Body Politic, which later turned into Extra.
Yeah.
And then later became sort of the Pink Triangle Press.
Well, it became the Pink Triangle Press, and then Extra.
Okay.
It was Daily Extra, and then it's just Extra with an exclamation mark.
Yeah.
All the other way around. But yeah, no, it's I forget what the name is.
But it started off as the Body Politic, which was more of a sort of a political update, mm-hmm. of what was happening in LGBT politics in Canada in the late 70s, early 80s. It was only around for, what, 4 years or something like that?
It wasn't very long. Yeah. No. And it was all, I believe, at the time, very much organic, yeah. Volunteer-driven.
And a lot of it was Toronto and sometimes talking about Ottawa.
Yeah.
But when they're talking about Ottawa.
There's a strong presence here in Ottawa.
Yeah. But in the Body Politic, whenever they mentioned Ottawa, it wasn't about Ottawa as a municipality. It was Ottawa as the capital of Canada. Mm-hmm. And this is something that, like, I'm very aware of because I'm not from Ottawa. When people talk about Ottawa, that, you know, you have to distinguish Ottawa as a community versus Ottawa as the capital. And don't get me started on people who say that there's no difference, because that's...
There's two Ottawas.
Yeah, there really... And there's two Londons and there's two Parises. I mean, there's two... A lot of things, yeah. But that's... Anyway. So yeah, it started off more as a kind of a local rag, but also largely about politics. And by politics, I don't just mean politics as in, like, what's happening in the House of Commons or what kind of laws are being passed, but also politics from the perspective of, like, you know, feminist theory and civil rights theory and sometimes things promoting music or talking about representation, media deconstruction, a lot of the sort of thing that we now associate with blogs on the internet.
Yeah.
And it was sort of the early version of a blog. But we've sort of, you know, then they got some money behind them and then they turn into Pink Triangle Press and they actually started printing on a larger scale and distributing across Canada. I mean, I grew up in Hamilton, and if you don't know Southern Ontario well, and I'm pretty sure most of our listeners don't, Hamilton is sort of like the Queens of Toronto. From the CN Tower. So if you're in the heart of Toronto,
yeah,
you got in your car, you'd get to Hamilton in about an hour and a half. That's with traffic.
Yeah.
If it's 2 a.m. and the highways are empty, you could probably do it in 55 minutes, so long as there's
from the tiny airport in Billy Bishop Airport in Toronto to Oakville in 20 minutes in an Uber once. I was like, this is insane. It was like 1 a.m.
Well, Billy Bishop is on an island, though. How'd you get off the island so fast?
Well, once I'm off the island, they've got that underground tunnel-y thing now.
Oh!
With walkerators.
How did I not know that?
Yeah.
Oh. I just... The only time I've ever been to the island, it was on a ferry. Ferry, F-E-R-R-Y. Not, like... I wasn't, like, riding piggyback on a large homosexual. Although that would have been fun, actually, going to Toronto Island on a...
On the back of a homosexual?
Large homosexual, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you'd have to... Because I'm a large homosexual, so if they could
so
carry me...
So even larger homosexual.
Yeah, or very strong, like a short, athletic, like...
Like a bodybuilding homosexual.
Yeah, yeah. They could probably give me a piggyback. But they would really have to lift... Gorkum has done that before. Yeah.
Yeah, so now you're going to have to ask him to give you a piggyback.
Right?
Into the...
Yeah.
Actually, don't we have a long-standing offer to our listeners that you will give them a piggyback ride?
Right.
If they tweet us.
Yeah.
At Velvet Studio One, tweet us, and Sebastian may take up the offer of giving you a piggyback ride.
Yeah. I don't have strong upper body, but I've got really strong legs. So yeah. So long as you hold on tight, I can carry you.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's unrelated. What were we talking? Oh, right, media. And so what's happening now is it's kind of swinging around back to where it started. And this is kind of the topic of today's show, is the future of queer media, because it started off with local rags being thrown off on local photocopiers, and it was very sort of low-tech and volunteer-based, and then it turned into traditional media by the 90s and early 2000s, and now it's falling back on what it used to be, which includes us. Now, this is not to say that, you know, you and I personally are the future of all queer media.
Absolutely
in Canada.
Absolutely not, no.
But we are kind of starting off as a sort of less radical, less punk. Not radical as in, like, radical left or radical right, but radical as in, like, radical progressive.
Yeah.
Which is what the Body Politic started off as. It was very radical progressive. And it was not necessarily about destroying things, but it was more about deconstructing things and asking difficult questions. Some of the difficult questions could fall on the left or right side of the spectrum. It wasn't about that. It was just about difficult questions that needed asking, which is something that we... Actually, I don't know if we focus on difficult things that need asking. We tend to focus on important things that need asking that nobody seems to be talking about.
Well, our mission and mandate is to talk about the things that no one else is talking about. And I realize talking about media and fake news is everyone's talking about it, but who's talking about it in the queer context?
Yeah.
That conversation is not happening. Now, we're going to be talking, or I will be having a conversation in a few moments about what is fake news, how is it a Canadian problem, and how I believe community media can be that solution, using the queer lens to kind of frame it all together. But before we get to that,
We're going to have to define what the queer lens is.
Absolutely.
Because not everyone, you know, not everybody went to
university. And we will do that right after the music break. We have Clean Bandits with their track Symphony. And if you ever get the chance to check out the music video, it's a wonderful love story between two gay characters. And then straight after that, we've got Scared of the Dark by hashtag 90s throwback. Steps. Uh-huh. Did you know before today that Steps were now a thing again?
I had heard that they were getting back together, but I just thought it was going to be like Mel B hanging out with Mel C to do a duet. Like, I thought it was going to be that kind of thing, which I think they did for the X Factor once. Like, Mel C showed up because Mel B was on. Mel B and Mel C from the Spice Girls. For
yeah, not Steps. Just
So I thought it was just like, when I heard that they were getting back together, I thought it was going to be for like, to do a song in a hall, to do fundraising or something. This is a new song.
Yeah.
Steps made a new song.
They have an album coming out.
That's...
Yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't sound like Steps.
But Clean Bandit does sound like Clean Bandit. We'll be right back after these two songs. Catch you in a minute.
I've been hearing symphonies. Before all I heard was silence, a rhapsody for you and me, and every melody is timeless. Life was stringing me along, then you came and you cut me loose, was solo singing on my own. Now I can't find a key without you, and now your song is on repeat. And I'm dancing on to your heartbeat. And when you're gone, I feel incomplete. So if you want the truth, I just wanna be part of your symphony. Will you hold me tight and not let go? Symphony, like a love song on the radio. What you can see can hurt you, they say. But I've been blind too many times before. Never see it coming your way. Shadows and secrets hide. Give me the bright lights of the dance floor to shine inside this broken heart of mine. The way you move, I'm forgetting all the ghosts in my mind. Just say your mind and stay.
You were just listening to Clean Bandit's symphony, and earlier we had a wonderful conversation about Scared of the Dark by Steps, who I still can't get over the fact they're back. Like, what the heck? Steps are back.
Wait, Steps? No, wait. Steps did have a gay one. It was S Club that didn't have a gay one.
I forget which one's which.
Depeche Mode has no gay ones.
Which is ridiculous.
Which is still baffling. It would be like finding out that Engelbert Humperdinck or that...
Karma Club was all straight. Not really.
Karma Club? Culture Club.
Culture Club, yes. Sorry. It's like a Karma Chameleon and Culture Club at the same time.
No, they were all... Actually, they were all exes. They had all dated each other or someone in common at some point in time. So, yeah. And then they made music for like 15 years after that. So that's maturity.
That is maturity. That's how you do a good breakup. So we were talking just before the break about applying a bit of a queer lens to fake news and yada, 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 yada. So how do we apply the queer lens in this context? Because there is the academic queer lens.
Yeah.
So I'll explain cliff notes what the academic queer lens is. So the queer lens, maybe correct me if I'm wrong here, is looking at what is othered, so what is excluded from conversations.
Yes.
So if you're applying the feminist lens, so let's say we're looking at elections, and we were looking at it from a feminist lens. The questions we're asking is...
It's always about equity.
Yes. So why aren't women being elected? What are the barriers that prevent women from being elected? Well, what is the barriers that reinforce men being elected?
Depending on what variety of feminism you're looking at.
Yeah.
I mean...
But we're trying to get to the queer lens.
Yeah, I know. But just feminism is more about equity. And so you could also talk about how people who are poor have less ability...
Absolutely.
...to take the day off...
To go and vote or run for office or what have you. Yeah. So that's the kind of feminist lens. So looking at a thing, but maybe looking at it from the angle or the perspective to look at what's missing from this other perspective.
My favorite example of queering something is to queer the Cold War by looking at it from the perspective of Norway.
Yes.
Which was the one nation that refused to participate in the Cold War. Well, they're the only major industrialized, modernized nation.
Yeah.
So we're not struggling with famine or flooding or anything like that during the 80s and 90s. And they...
So the context here for the Cold War is that there was the Soviets and the Americans, and everybody came down on the right or the left-hand side. You were either First World, which was the Americans and buddies, Second World, which was the communists, or Third World, which was those where the battles really took place. So the proxy wars were happening in the Third World.
Yeah.
And but the way you would queer that is like, okay, who's not in this equation?
Yeah.
You know, who's being missed out?
Yeah.
And the reason why is that something that's queer is something that's other, something that's unusual. So,
and then in the case of Norway, they just hated everything. And so if they saw Russian subs in the North Sea, they would tell the Americans the location. And if they saw
American subs,
if they saw American stay behind agents in Europe, they would tell the KGB their location. Mm-hmm. And they would openly say to both sides, by the way, we found this and we told the other side. And eventually nobody would play with Norway anymore. And that's how they liked it, which is not something you normally hear about. You normally hear about people falling down on either side or not being able to afford to participate and then being used as pawns.
So this is the queer lens. We're looking at what is being othered, what perspective has been ignored or undermined or left out
or doesn't fit the model.
That is exactly it. I actually applied the queer lens to international relations studies when I was in my undergrad, mainly because who on earth would apply the queer lens to IR? I did. But when it comes to fake news, so we have this dichotomy. We have real news,
quote unquote,
which is often established mainstream media. So we've got like CNN, Fox News in America. In Canada, we've got things like The Post, The Globe and Mail, CBC. Mm-hmm. That would be considered real news.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the other side, we've got like fake news, which is, you know, blogs that are unvetted with no sources.
Yeah.
Anybody whose aunt who's a racist probably has their own blog. And that information gets fed up the chain. So who is being ignored here in this equation? And I believe that the perspective that isn't being looked at is qualified but not mainstream media.
Okay.
So that would be community media. So community press. So university press. Very often these are budding journalists who are going through ethics courses and they have journalism. They're doing journalism degrees, as much as you decry a journalism degree.
Would you include like free agents who do participate with the Associated Press?
Yeah, so freelancers that are in mainstream but maybe not working for the big titles. It's people who have journalistic training but maybe not be a journalist.
Yeah.
And I also am willing, I'm kind of looking to include community radio in this conversation as well, such as ourselves. We don't have exactly journalist training, but we are held to a legal standard. You know, if we can't tell you fake news by law.
There's a lot of stories that we wanted to tell but couldn't because we couldn't.
Things that we can't substantiate.
Yeah, or we could, but not in a way that was satisfactory.
Absolutely. We actually heard a rumor about a prominent community leader. A rumor about a prominent community leader, and it was a sex assault allegation that was never substantiated. There was another rumor about somebody related to kind of child welfare. Extrapolate from that what you will. We couldn't substantiate that. And the whole point is that we would take that moment to go, would this stand up to the Canadian broadcasting standards?
Yeah.
No, and it would.
Could we survive a libel case?
Well, we couldn't survive any case. We're volunteer run. And that kind of brings us to the point here where fake news or unregulated media, completely unregulated media, that claims to be news, doesn't have a standard. Well, there's
sometimes it doesn't claim to be anything. It just dresses itself up to look like news, which is different to say, well, you know, we didn't say we were a news source, even though you go to the site and it looks exactly like one. Like they've put on the clothes of a news source.
And very often the clothes of the news source adjust so that they can get the ad revenue. They trick people into looking at it for the ads.
Well, sometimes you get alternatives. So like Vice News, for example, which is based out of Montreal, so it is a Canadian media outlet. Well, it started off in Montreal, now it's international. Yeah,
they were funded by a Quebec grant, I think.
In the early days. They present themselves to look like a media outlet, but really it's more like a living documentary channel. Mm-hmm. Because they're always telling stories about people, and anytime you see any Vice report, all the things that they tell you about the people in the clip is true.
Yeah.
But the politics or the situation surrounding that person of interest sometimes is not substantiated, but they don't really have to because that's not what they're talking about. When they did, two years ago, a special from Crimea. They actually sent Vice reporters out to Crimea, and they're the only ones telling the story about what did it mean to be Ukrainian in Crimea while everything was happening, regardless of the politics. They didn't really say that much about politics. They said, like, what do you know? And that was really just a preamble to how did you find out about that? Because it was more about how do people gain access to information and how do they gain access to the politics? How do they gain access to the ideas? And that was really the questions they were asking. What was actually happening at that point in time? They're like, we don't know. We don't think it's knowable. It's going to be one of those things like World War One. It's going to be, you know, 20 years in the future. We're going to be able to reconstruct it.
I mean, the difference is that the stations claiming to know what was going on propaganda from Russia.
Yes.
Which is a major issue with propaganda from Russia.
Clearly stating that they did not know what was happening.
So I want to give folks a very quick history of kind of where fake news may have come from. So everyone may be familiar with the term like yellow journalism. False or fake news has... It's not a new phenomenon. It's always happened. Okay. Like, did you know that in 2016, Environment Canada announced that they're going to give visas to migratory birds? I mean, and that's fake. That's obviously fake. You can't give visas to birds. But it was an April Fool's joke. And everyone goes, oh, haha, you got me. Moving on. No one's harmed there. There isn't a bird's lobby up in arms. You know, these things. My favorite one was
BBC. If you want to talk about the history of fake news, I think War of the Worlds really should feature in that prominently.
Well, I was going to get to that.
Well, excuse me.
You interjected. So one of my favorite ones is the BBC ran an April Fool's joke saying that in Italy, the small town that was growing pasta had hit a drought. And there was VT footage of people who would just put pasta on a bush. And people were like, wanted to buy the pasta bush to grow their own pasta. And of course, War of the Worlds, which led to panic in the UK itself, was fake news.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say this, most people think of War of the Worlds as fake news that caused panic. But what I'm trying to get down to here is War of the Worlds was not real.
No.
It was a fiction.
Yes.
And it was a fiction of an end of the world.
And not only that, but it was a radio drama, mm-hmm. and it happened during a time slot when they normally had radio dramas.
Yeah.
It was just people tuning in who didn't have the radio schedule memorized, thinking it was news.
See, this is where the fake news actually comes in. So some people were caught unawares by War of the Worlds and the BBC thinking, oh my gosh, there are aliens, and may have panicked. But it is never, ever to the extreme that people think it was. It was to the advantage of mainstream media at the time to kind of exaggerate this effect.
Yes.
To kind of knock the BBC down a peg or two. So it's interesting that one of the world's most prominent examples of fake news was actually the backlash is fake. So Canada has its own things. Like this hour is 7 days. In the 60s became this hour is 22 minutes. You know, and which came out in 93. So there's a lot of a very strong Canadian history of like satirical news, like a tongue-in-cheek take on the news.
Oh, so like The Onion.
Yeah.
Based out of Chicago, I believe.
So in Canada, we have The Beaverton, yes, which came into popularity. We also have The Syrup Tap, The Syrup Trap, The Lapine, and The True North Times, which kind of has a Daily Show approach, which is more lampooning the news.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a number of...
I find the Beaverton is hit and miss, but when they nail it, oh my God, it's good.
Yeah. The thing about the Beaverton is that they look at real events and give a fake spin.
Yes.
So, for example, I think someone, like a mainstream media, actually quoted the Beaverton's coverage of Elbowgate. Okay. When the MP that got elbowed, the Beaverton said that she showed up in crutches and a... and a sling the next day, and somebody commented in mainstream media that it's outrageous that MPs in crutches have to deal with this, which of course was just the only thing. It only happened in the Beaverton, which is entirely fake.
Mm-hmm. There's also, if we're talking about hilarious, yeah, fake news for people to look up, I also highly recommend The Reductress. It's not very well known, but it's a fake feminist site. I'm actually reading it's kind of like a women's magazine, like Chatelaine, except it's satire. Like titles like Three Cute Ways to Ask a Ghost to Come Back Later, or Breathtaking Hike Locations for Faking an Injury So Jackson Will Touch Your Leg. Five Snacks to Tide You Over When You're Craving the Taste of Cum. it's basically like, you know, 10 ways to get him to notice you, except satirical. But yeah, these things exist, and most of them,
yeah,
make very clear that this is not based on actual events.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Beaverton claims it's the world's most trusted news source, which is its own satire. Now, the interesting here is that Canada is very different from the rest of the world. Well, maybe not the rest of the world, but it's very, very different from America. In 1992, there's a Supreme Court challenge where Ernst Zundel argued, and he was a Holocaust denier.
Okay.
And the case was essentially whether or not you can deny the Holocaust in media.
Okay.
And it meant, the decision meant, that a person could not be charged with spreading false information.
That was an American case?
It was a Canadian case.
Oh, okay.
And it kind of really cracked open the...
Oh, you could not be charged.
You could not be charged. So actually, in the gay context here, do you remember the guy who was handing out anti-gay pamphlets? And there was a big debate as to whether or not he was sharing hate propaganda.
Right.
And his argument was that you can't be imprisoned for sharing false information, and how do you define hate propaganda? He actually shared it on a campus in Ottawa whilst facing the Supreme Court in Ottawa, because he came to visit, and he's like, well, I am here. May as well do that one thing that got me into the Supreme Court. Who knows? But at the time, they were like, well, we have regulations that say that news has to be true, has to be sourceful. So the MPs were like, well, how are you going to reconcile the fact that you can't be arrested for sharing fake news with the fact that you have a law, or you have regulations saying it has to be honest and true news?
Okay.
The CRTC dodged the question for like 10, 15 years.
The CRTC being?
The communications, the Canadian Radio Telecommunications Commission.
There you go.
The regulator for radio and television. So the issue now is that these regulations for radio and television exist. They're still there. So we can't tell fake news.
Right.
Because we're radio. And your television news can't be fake either. But online, there is no such regulation.
Oh.
There is no such regulation. And in fact, the Competition Bureau...
How do they distinguish between news and satire?
Oh, on radio and television?
Yeah.
I think it has to be made evident.
Oh.
Yeah. But you can't claim to be news if you're satire.
Okay.
Yeah. It has to be distinct. So in 2012, the Competition Bureau essentially raised the flag and was like, you know, if you're going to these news sources, they might be fake.
Right.
It was such a serious issue. They made, in Fraud Prevention Month, they made it a big headline topic. And the idea being that, oh, well, the industry will self-regulate, but it clearly hasn't.
Oh, yeah.
So why is this important? This is important because fake news is manipulating the narrative. Fake news is shaping conversations that are very serious. And by shaping the conversations, it's becoming news.
Right.
If something does a thing that's newsworthy, it is now news.
Yes.
Which is kind of unfortunate. I mean...
Well, it's sort of the idea that, like, in politics... A lie that's believed to be true is now what the truth is. Or well, there's an actual saying about that, that whatever you believe to be true is the truth or something like that. You have no idea what I'm talking about.
Not off the top of my head, no.
Oh, well, all right.
So the good...
Someone out there in Radioland knows exactly what I'm talking about, and they know the quote. And if you know the quote, you can contact us on Twitter, Facebook, or we have an email address, I think.
Yeah.
Somewhere out there.
So... The House of Commons Standing Committee on Canadian Heritage, Healy Fry, the MP for, I want to say, Edmonton or Vancouver, I forget which riding she's in.
They're basically the same.
We're going to get some hate mail. She essentially said, people believe what they read, and how can a democracy be well served where the information is not verifiable?
Mm-hmm.
So people aren't going to Google whether or not the website they're looking at is real or fake. They're going to take it on face value. If it looks like a real news site, they're going to assume it's a real news site. And this is dangerous. And I'll give you a reason why this is dangerous by giving you a Canadian example. Are you familiar with Pizzagate?
Pizzagate?
Yeah.
I am not familiar with Pizzagate.
So during the election, there was a
rumor. The recent Canadian election?
The recent American election.
Oh, okay.
With Hillary and Trump. There was a rumor that... there was a secret child sex ring being run by the Democratic Party.
Okay.
And that these pizza shops were a front for a child.
Pizza shops.
Yeah, pizza. Pieces.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it can't be pizza because that's a Canadian thing.
But they were pizza shops were a front.
We'll say Pizza Hut.
It's not Pizza Hut. Well, I don't want to get sued.
Oh, true. Fair enough. Okay. It was a pizza emporium.
It's probably a place as well. A location selling pizza. So anyway, the point being that some madman read this not real news, got outraged and went in to free the children and investigate and find out and shot rounds into the pizza joint. Luckily, ooh, Nobody was injured. But it kind of, the real consequence there is that somebody went in with a gun.
Right.
Guess who wrote it?
Breitbart.
No, a lady in Belleville.
Okay. Belleville, Ontario?
Belleville, Ontario. She was like, I was just writing what I knew. Some drunk guy in a bar told her that, you know, this pizza joint's a front for a child exploitation ring. And she felt compelled to share that information. Never, ever fact check. And she doesn't regret that decision at all. Because they followed up. Like, how can you have been... You're directly responsible for this fake news.
Yes.
That led to somebody with a gun going in thinking that he was saving children from crazy Democrats. No remorse. Absolutely no remorse. She'd do it again. Because there is no consequences.
Right.
For putting... And I'm sorry the language here. Bullshit online.
Actually, bullshit has a philosophical definition. Something Frankfurt, I think, is a philosopher. He wrote a treatise called On Bullshit, in which he defined bullshit, because the weird thing is that bullshit is perpendicular to truth, in the sense that you can have bullshit that is true, and you can also have bullshit that are lies. It's a different dimension from truth and lies, from truth and falsehood as well. He defined bullshit as being when you say a thing for the effect that it produces, regardless of whether or not it's true. So, I mean, you could say, people are starving in... Like, you could say there's widespread famine in southern... North Dakota.
Okay.
And, you know, hundreds of thousands of children are starving in their homes. And so therefore, we should pull all American aid out from overseas and solely fund North Dakota feeding all these children. Totally fake story. I just made it up right now. But you're saying it for the effect, mm-hmm, of the drama of we should focus on this. Now, as it happens, if it were true that there were starving families in North Dakota, and there's poverty everywhere, I'm sure there are starving families in North Dakota, maybe not on that scale. Even if it is true, the fact that you're saying it and you're wrapping up this truth,
embellishing almost,
in the drama so that you get the emotional reaction you're looking for. So this is why the most dangerous kind of bullshitter is the kind that also speaks the truth.
Yeah.
And this is something that Frankfurt, I think his name was, spoke about at length. Now, an interesting response to that, somebody else in another book, a follow-up, it was a whole bunch of other philosophers writing essays about the nature of bullshit. One of them mentioned that politeness is a form of bullshit. So when you're apologizing and expressing remorse, it doesn't matter if you're actually remorseful. It's the act of saying that you're sorry. What you're doing is you're acknowledging that you did something wrong, even if you don't feel bad for it. So, I mean, this whole idea of, like, children shouldn't apologize unless they mean it, that's messed up. But anyway, when you're apologizing, what you're actually saying is not, I feel remorse, but I acknowledge that I did something that was not perfect. And so a lot of politeness is a form of bullshit, but it's a positive form of bullshit. So anyway, saying bullshit is actually now considered to be it's a philosophical concept. You can say that.
So back to the topic. So we've given a bit of a brief on not only fake news, but also bullshit. The more you know.
Yeah.
So why?
It's actually a really easy to read essay too. It's like 20 pages. You can read it in no time. Anyway, sorry, go on.
So why is this relevant? How do we queer that? And earlier I was saying about how let's look at media that is, you know, local. And the reason why I want to look at local media is because in the States, 40% of people get their news from Facebook.
Yes.
And they're getting the news from major, they tend to go to trusted sources, but if you see a link on a headline, it's clickbait. You're going through. There's no regulation of the internet.
Yeah.
The only way you can know it's truthful is if they've got a radio station or a TV station.
Yeah.
Because they are regulated.
Yeah.
But if you don't know, who's going to check?
Yeah.
So the question, the reason why I'm like, the solution here, or a solution.
A solution.
A solution to this massive problem is, what is happening in your community? If you're listening to us right now, on your FM dial, or maybe even on the podcast, you're listening to a local radio station.
Yes.
You probably know where they are. Or a simple Google search will find where they are. And if you don't think something's truthful, you can phone them and be like, hey guy, I don't think those comments about bullshit is accurate. you know, and have that dialogue. You, as a local community, are empowered to engage your local community media.
You know, you say that, now I'm going to fact check myself.
You're going to fact check yourself. there's like Snopes and iPolitics and these agencies that work on the massive big picture fact checking. But, you know, the local, you know, if your councillor does something dodgy.
It was Harry Frankfurt. There you go.
There you go. You found it. Excellent. A quick Google search. But my point is that local media provides that for that interaction. You can't call CNN and be like, I'm not sure that was entirely accurate. Well, you can. You get through some answering machine, probably.
Yeah.
But you can call your local newspaper or your local school newspaper or your local radio station, your community access TV station. These are things that are fundamentally rooted in your very own community. If they get something wrong, that you can prove that, then you'll be able to tell whether or not they apologize. If they bury something on page 14, you'll know, and you can follow up. But you don't have that access to the national media. So why is that a possible solution? I feel like there's an undervalued trust there. People don't realize the value that relationship has. But it's underfunded. It doesn't have the resources.
Well, the other thing is that when you focus on local like that, you have a different kind of economy of reputation.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at large scale things, I mean, some of the media sources that I tend to trust are things like The Guardian. I like sometimes The Independent, but it can be a bit iffy. Definitely BBC, CBC, and Al Jazeera, actually, as well. But something they all have in common is occasionally they will publish retractions.
Yeah.
Any media source that occasionally publishes retractions, or even at the bottom of an article, like if an article is more than 3 days old, generally speaking, there will be some kind of caveat down there where it'll say,
We got the numbers on the number of car accidents in 2014 wrong, or something like that. Like, it'll indicate that there was an edit or there was an update. Any new source that does that, I trust it a little bit more because they're willing to admit when they're wrong. And that's a big deal. Now, when you're looking at local media, it's a different kind of reputation because, you know, saying... we trust Jim because Jim is generally right.
Jim being the mayor of Ottawa.
No, Jim being guy who writes articles.
Okay, for some random
blog.
Jim.
Random Jim, yeah. So I should have said Jack because Jack is the everyman in English.
Okay. Joe Schmo, the journalist.
No, I'm going to stick with Jack. Jack in the box, Jack be nimble, Jack Spratt. Okay. Jack be swift. Jack is the everyman in the English language.
Okay, move along.
Anyway, so... So Jack is writing blogs and people trust Jack, but maybe people trust Jack because Jack is the same flavor of crazy as the people who trust him. Actually, no, that is an issue, isn't it?
Yeah. All right, we're going to move along. I actually wanted to quickly mention that The Guardian and the CBC and the BBC are very distinct in how they're regulated. I mentioned earlier that television and radio stations in Canada are regulated by law to provide truthful news.
Well, state-funded media, as much as a lot of people think that it's propaganda, the whole point behind state-funded media is that it is backed up by a financial institution that is not capitalist, so that like the CBC does feel comfortable publishing something about how some company did some kind of a toxic oil spill or something, and it's not going to impact their funding. Strangely enough, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, so ABC News, not ABC American ABC, but Australian ABC, they're also, I think, partly funded by the state, and they have interesting news reports.
So in the BBC, it's actually, they're actually owned, not by the state, by an independent trust, through an act of government. And it is in their mandate. If they get, they are legally not allowed to get the news wrong. So it'll affect their funding.
Yeah.
The Guardian is interesting because that's also an independent trust. There's no media mogul controlling the strings. Rupert Murdoch does not own The Guardian.
Ooh.
He owns literally everything else, but he doesn't own The Guardian. Rupert Murdoch, for folks listening, owns Fox News, for example.
And also the Star, I think?
He owns a lot of them. May not own The Star in Canada. The Star's a very common brand name.
Yeah.
He owns, I think, the Times, I think, as well.
The New York Times?
No, not the New York Times, just The Times.
The Times, okay.
But yeah, so The Guardian doesn't have this media mogul pulling strings.
Okay.
You know, they're not bound by somebody trying to manipulate government.
Okay.
So it is very, very... The editorials are truly independent in The Guardian.
Yes. And also with the editorials, they make it extra clear this is someone's opinion and not reporting.
And because it's held by a trust, you know, the editors don't go with the wind. You know, Alan Ransberger was there for 20 years as the editor of The Guardian. The whole point being is that the infrastructure, I believe that the infrastructure there is important. Now, this brings me back to community news. So let's say you don't like this show being on this radio station that you're listening to right now.
All right.
What can you, Jack B. Nimble, do about it? Go to the radio station. Talk to the station manager face to face. You don't like that, phone them or her. You know, give them a ring. You have that power. You can Google it. They're probably 20 minutes away.
I've met a few station managers, and I can tell you right now, best way to do it is to email them and then call them about the email that you sent.
Or you don't want to do that, or you think the station is going in the wrong direction by airing this kind of conversation. You know what? You, as Joe or Jack Nimble, have the power to do. Join the organization. Become a member of the organization. Help shape the board of the organization. You know, be engaged at the governance level. Volunteer on the programming committee to help have that conversation. You know, have an engaging conversation about people. It's difficult because we're a syndicated show, but I'm sure if somebody in the community was upset with us, we would react because we want to reflect the community.
Oh, yes.
You know, and that is a level of accountability that these online blogs simply do not have.
True, yeah.
So community media is regulated and by law has to be truthful. We are far more accountable to our local communities than these blogs ever will be.
We're known quantities. You know that Luke's voice and my voice. It's the same voice every time. It's not like a blog where you're not really sure who's writing. Like with community radio, if you get anybody on the air, then the station manager is going to know who they are. Maybe they're not going to announce their name, but their name is known by someone, and they are accountable to someone. And if we did start doing things that were weird and inflammatory, you know, there's a nice lady with pretty hair who would be calling us because...
Yeah, we'd get an email. And if we were really inflammatory, we'd get dropped.
Yes.
Because, and that's just part of the thing. If someone's being ridiculous, you know, the community responds, media responds to its own community. And the problem with fake news is that its community is what it decides it to be.
Yeah.
And if that community is people stupid enough to click through and follow ads to generate that revenue, then guess what? That's who they're going for.
Yeah.
They're going for sensational headlines just to bring your attention. So how do we clear fake news? We look at the options at who's being excluded. I believe community media is excluded. I believe community media is a solution to fake news because it gives you... Jack Nimble, the listener, the ability to interact and hold us accountable.
Jack Nimble is not the everyman. It's actually Jack Stone.
Well, Joe Schmo, Lady Jane, I don't know, whoever you are, feel empowered.
Yeah.
But I do believe we've actually run out of time.
No, we haven't.
We're pretty darn close to it, I think. So we're going to play out. I wanted to play the Russia's entry for Eurovision, which is Flame is Burning. We're not going to play it because we don't have time. But check it out. Flame is Burning, the Russian Eurovision entry.
Last year, Russia's entry, I remember it wowed me so much. And then later, I went back and rewatched it. And it turns out it does not have the wow value the second time. Because you realize he's doing a bunch of really cool looking things that have nothing to do with the music. And it doesn't create a narrative.
But because it's so cool, you're like, wow.
Yeah, wow! But yeah, no, it's not actually, no. Yeah.
So the reason why Russia is noteworthy here is because they were believed to be boycotting this year's Eurovision. It's in the Ukraine.
Yes.
The Ukraine also introduced, they mandated that X amount of programming on radio and television is in Ukrainian. They're fighting back against Russian propaganda.
Okay.
So it's a bit of a fighting word. But then at like 20 minutes into before the deadline for submitting entries, Russia like put theirs in, which is Flame is Burning, check it out. Now, last week, for folks who are avid listeners, I was talking about, I think it was Romania's entry, Yodelit, I think was the song.
Yes.
And I was talking about how Canada should have an entry, and it made me think of this one Canadian artist, and neither for no love, no money could I remember the name. Well, one week later, I finally remembered it. It was Lenny Kim from Quebec.
The province or Quebec the city?
The province. I'm sure he's from somewhere in Quebec, but I forgot to write that bit down.
Even in French, by the way, they do not have separate names for Quebec the province and Quebec the city.
It's just Quebec.
You have to say La Ville de Quebec, the city of Quebec, if you want to distinguish. But there's a huge mistake there, by the way. Like, some idiot did not think that through. But anyway, sorry.
Anyway, we're playing out with Lenny Kim and YOLO. If you think this should be Canada's entry to Eurovision, let's start talking to CBC and see if we can make it happen for 2018. YOLO for 2018, that's what I say. That's all we got time for now.
YOLO, like you only live once?
Yeah. Lenny Kim for 2018, obviously.
Why?
Because this song is very Europop.
Okay. Yeah. We'll roll with that. Let's listen to this thing.
Anyways, don't forget to get in touch. We are accountable to you, our listeners.
Yes.
Tweet us at VelvetStudio1 or find us, Talk Can Queer, on Facebook, or tweet us, Talk Can Queer. There's lots of ways to be in touch. And that's all for now. I've been Luke Smith.
I've been Sebastian.
Bye-bye.
We'll see you next week.
Des demains ouverts, toujours plus ouverts. J'ai tout le chemin pour de la vie à faire. Personne ne me le fera à l'envers. J'aurai des jours et des nuits seules. C'est pas la vie prochaine, c'est pas la vie prochaine. La vie prochaine,
C'est maintenant qui m'appelle. Tout se passe ici sous les étoiles. Alors j'ouvre les voiles. Shake my hand so we can dance. We don't need les voiles. On ne vit qu'une fois. Just stand if you can dance. Cause we don't need les voiles. Avec moi, mes amis et mes frères. À moi de poser toutes les pierres. C'est pas la vie prochaine. C'est pas la vie prochaine. La vie prochaine. C'est maintenant qui m'appelle. Je prends les heures comme elles dévalent. Elle est déraisonnable. Shake my hand so we can dance. We only live once. On ne vit qu'une fois. Understand if you can dance. Cause we only live once.
Shake my head.